Hello, welcome to Books on the Go, a podcast where we talk about our book of the week. I'm Anna Bailey-Karras and I'm here with Annie Waters. Hi, Annie.
Hello.
And this week we've been reading The Colony by Audrey McGee. But first, book news. And last week we talked about the Booker International long list and we were so belated. Well, when I say we, I was so late editing and uploading the episode that actually in the interim the shortlist has already been announced. So we're very, very late. But and so it's interesting reading back over that, listening back to that episode to see if we had any clue. Mm. So there were some that were standouts. So the shortlist is Cursed Bunny by Bora Chung, translated by Anton Herr, which is the one that we both want to read. Mm-hmm. Neither of us have can find it.
In Australia, no. Not available in the US. I think I think they must be republishing or printing a new edition or something. I can't find it anywhere.
Well, stay tuned. We will be snapping that up as soon as we can, just for the cover, if nothing else. A New Name, Septology by John Foss, translated by Damien Searles. Heaven by Mieko Kawakami, translated by Samuel Bett and David Boyd. Mm. So we enjoyed her
Breasts and Eggs.
Have you read Heaven?
I haven't read Heaven, no. I've read one other of hers, but yeah, I'm keen to.
Ellen and Nose by Claudia Pinheiro, translated by Frances Riddle. Tomb of Sand by Geetanjali Shree, translated by Daisy Rockwell, and that was the Tilted Access one that I was interested in. It actually looks quite long. Mm. We're looking at the Booker International photo.
Well, not as long as the final one and on then the list.
The Books of Jacob by Olga Tokarczuk, translated by Jennifer Croft. Mm. So Annie sent me a message saying, oh, do we need to read Books of Jacob when the shortlist came out? And I said, oh, yes, I'll read it if you will. And then I had a good chat with Jason at Imprints and I said, look, I nearly bought it and I said I didn't get on with Flights and I didn't get on with Drive Your Plough Over the Bones of the Dead. And he said, well, I don't think you'll enjoy this one.
Has he read it?
I don't know if he has, but he said it's really long.
Yeah, like it is.
For a book that you probably won't enjoy. Mm. So I didn't buy it and I feel like
I might give it a go. I'll see how we go. Maybe we can do one of the things where you read one, I'll read one and we'll battle it off.
Oh, that sounds like an excellent idea. I'll read one and you read the Books of Jacob.
Heaven's only about 120 pages, so you can start with that.
I'm happy to give Heaven a go. Look, I'm intrigued by most of them.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it's always a really interesting prize.
Yeah, so that's the Booker International and then the other one is the Dylan Prize shortlist. Is it Dylan Prize?
Dylan Thomas.
Dylan. I was going to say the Dylan Thomas. Dylan to his friends. Dylan Thomas Prize shortlist. And this is quite significant. It's about £30,000 or $52,000 Australian dollars for the best literary work in English by a writer aged 39 or under. Mm. And the shortlist is No One Is Talking About This by Patricia Lockwood, which we really loved.
Yeah, amazing.
Open Water by Caleb Azuma Nelson.
Which we really loved.
Which we also loved. And I'm so pleased to see that getting some recognition because that was his debut. Filthy Animals by Brandon Taylor, who
also a debut. All three of these are also debut novels so far.
Well, Filthy Animals I thought was his
short stories. And I haven't read that one.
Real Life was his debut novel which was shortlisted for the Booker. Mm. And I love Brandon Taylor. Mm. A Passage North by Anouk Arunprakasan.
And I heard him talk at Writers Week, and that sounds fascinating, about the Tamil conflict in India in the 90s.
And that also had some recognition in the Booker Prize.
Booker. Yep.
Yeah. And Auguries of a Minor God by Needy Zach and The Sweetness of Water by Nathan Harris. Mm. So those last couple I haven't heard as much about.
I know The Sweetness of Water was on the National Book Award.
Yes.
Long list or short list.
Good.
And I've never heard of Auguries of a Minor God. So But I think we're doing pretty well with that list.
We are. We are. One of our rare wins, Annie. So I wonder if we can pick the winner of that. I think I'd have to read at least one of the others to get more of a sense of it. So now on to our book of the week, The Colony by Audrey McGee. Audrey McGee is an Irish author. So she was born in Ireland and she lives in Wicklow. Her first novel, The Undertaking, was shortlisted for the Women's Prize for Fiction, and as well as other prizes, and including the Dublin Literary Award and the Walter Scott Prize for Historical Fiction. So it had a lot of recognition. I haven't read The Undertaking. Have you read that one?
No.
So we can't fill you in much more about that. So The Colony is her second novel. And the other interesting thing about Audrey McGee is she has studied languages, and I think at the Dublin University, I believe, and I think that comes into The Colony because there's two main characters. One of them is a linguist or a language expert. So The Colony is set on an island just off the coast of Ireland. The two main characters are Lloyd and JP, and they both travel, so they're both visitors to the island. So the island is a very small population. They're not English speaking, although they can speak a little bit of English. It's set in the late 1970s, and it becomes apparent that it's set during the Troubles and sort of one of the worst years of the Troubles, 1979. But that's very subtle. That sort of becomes apparent as you read. Lloyd is an artist and he travels over there to paint, and he wants to paint this wild, unspoiled local island. And JP is a linguist and he's trying to capture the local language, the Irish language, which is at risk of dying out. There's a very interesting dynamic where the locals don't necessarily want them there or agree with their projects or want to take part in their projects, and they're not necessarily welcome, but they don't always have the self-awareness about that, which is quite interesting. And there's a bit of comedy underlying that as well. So of course the island can be seen as a metaphor for any colony, and hence the title of the book, and the English in particular colonizing Ireland. JP is a French character. He's a French Algerian, so there's another layer there, and it goes on from there. What did you think, Annie?
Well, so I recommended this after we were getting lots of people buying it. Another bookseller really highly recommended it to me. It got great reviews in The Guardian and various other places. And I did find it very intellectually stimulating, and especially towards the end I could kind of pick up where she was going with it. But the writing itself left me a bit cold. Both Lloyd and JP are incredibly infuriating characters who I don't think you're meant to sympathise with. You are meant to recognise that they are the colonising presence on this island, and that they're just basically both acting in their own self-interest, and they're both incredibly self-absorbed, and they keep going on these diatribes about like, oh, look at me going out into the wild unknown and taming the beast or meeting the exotic women that are here, and I'm bringing it all back to civilization, is the kind of sense that you get. And then you think, you're not cooking your own food, you're not doing your own laundry, you can't even sit up in the boat where someone else rows you over there that you've insisted on going in this tiny little boat across the Atlantic Sea. You're useless, and they're just, oh, I don't know, they're really, really frustrating characters. So, but I think that is the point. You're supposed to be infuriated by them.
It was very male-centric.
Oh, yeah, for a long period of time, which I think is a critical eye. And I think, there were lots of interesting ideas that it raised for me, and I did enjoy those. And then the structure of the book really picks up pace, because you get these long swathes of either Lloyd doing his art on the island or JP kind of interviewing the older population of the island and trying to get this pure Irish that he really wants to capture before it dies out and be the heroic man who's saved the island. But then you get that interspersed with the escalating violence in the north, and that I think worked best for me, those kind of little snippets that then pull you out of their everyday small town Irish life, and you can see the Irish characters in particular reflecting on the violence that's happening in the north. So the main family they're staying with. The mother is called Myreed. Her son, James, who's a 15-year-old boy and kind of has aspirations to be an artist as well. And then her mother and grandmother, who are they're all widows and they've all lost the menfolk in their life. So they're very poor and they're really struggling to get by. And that's why they agree to take in these
lodgers.
Lodgers, politely.
Idiot lodgers.
Yeah. But what did you think?
No, it was a DNF for me.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. But I sort of started reading it under a misapprehension, which is quite funny. Well, two things. One, I had you recommended it and another friend, Nick, recommended it and said he thought it was really good. And then I thought, okay, well, this looks good. And I thought, because we talked about the Women's Prize long list, that you'd recommended it from that list.
Okay, yeah.
And then it says on the, and I should have paid more attention, but it says on the cover, shortlisted for the Women's Prize for Fiction. And it actually, I think, is a little bit misleading because it's
her,
the author
rather than
herself, yeah, has been shortlisted. But
I do think that's a bit cheeky too.
It is not clear when you look at the cover that they're talking about a different book.
Yes.
And sometimes they do say from the Women's Prize shortlisted author, yeah, but that's not the case. Mm. It's not clear on this one. So I was reading it thinking, oh, this is from the Women's Prize long list,
yeah. Yeah,
which it isn't, just no, to be. And I started to think, wow, it's a really men, like there's a lot male of men centric in this book. I don't understand how it got onto the Women's Prize and clearly it didn't. And so that was one thing. But I did have you and Nick both, who are quite both discerning, telling me that this is fantastic, we have to read it. So I launched in, did not enjoy it. There were some things I liked. So I thought it had a real mood, and I've heard that elsewhere. I think one of the reviews just said it has a mood about it. Mm-hmm. And I always find it fascinating when authors can create that.
It's very damp and windy is the mood.
Yeah, damp and windy and
yeah, oppressive. Yeah.
There's an atmosphere to it. Is. And the pace of the island, the characters. I enjoyed the sort of awkward interactions, which felt very true, the fact that they're not really wanting these men there, but they don't necessarily say that out loud, but it's so evident, the humour that comes from that. So even in the first scene we've touched on, Lloyd travels to the island on a very, very old school boat, which is a rowboat, and it's not recommended, just to be clear. So don't try this at home. Even the
No one does it anymore.
No.
Even in the 70s.
For good reason.
So, yeah.
You know, and the sailor says, look, I need another person to help me row because this is not, you
safe.
Know, not advisable, not safe. And Lloyd is worried that, you know, his suitcase won't be secure or his case that he's taking over isn't secure. And the sailor says, they're grand, Mr. Lloyd. And Lloyd says, I hope they're secure. And the sailor says, as I said, they're grand, which I found quite funny because it's so understated. Oh,
all the gruff Irish humour is very appreciated. I pulled one out.
Because Lloyd's just being such an, you know, nincompoop. Yeah.
I pulled one out where all the Irish people have gone out for a walk because they're too frustrated with the two foreigners. Bean O'Neill, who is probably in her 60s, she's the grandmother of James, and she says, when's the priest coming back anyway? I could do with communion. And Mike Mikhail, who she's talking to, says, haven't heard on you. She says, and confession for murderous thoughts. Bless me, Father, for I pushed the Englishman off the cliff. One Hail Mary, said Mikhail. Bless me, Father, for I have pushed the Frenchman off the cliff. One Our Father, two Hail Marys. So there is humour running through it.
It's
but
very. I liked that dry humour. Yeah. And it was very true to life because I think that's how they would react to these awful characters. So then you've got Lloyd, and I thought it was so interesting how the Irish characters don't really resist Lloyd or argue with him, as we've seen in that scene. They just absorb it and they're content in themselves at the point when we meet them. They're, you know, they have their own lives and they don't really need Lloyd, but nor do they, you know, argue with him. And I just wondered if that was supposed to be a metaphor for the way, you know, if you have an aggressive country that colonizes your country or invades or takes over, and how the inhabitants respond to that and the way they react differently as well. So some of them are quite pragmatic about it and they adapt and they sort of make the best of it. And James is one interesting example, but there's also others where they don't necessarily push the invaders away or the the colonizers away. So it was interesting, and they felt true, like Lloyd being so arrogant, so obnoxious, so precious, so self-absorbed. It was like the customer from hell if you're running a hotel or something or a restaurant, and they exist.
Yeah.
So that was it rang true, but just not in a fun way to read. It was a bit hard to bear. The dialogue I thought was quite good, as were those sort of two examples show. One thing I really didn't like was the messaging. So it was so, to me, and on the one hand it's quite a subtle book because it's so quiet and not much happens, let's be honest. On the other hand, I felt like even from the title alone, it's giving you this big message about an issue in the way that, you know, Christos Tsolkas complains about in the novel Seven and a Half, where so many books, I don't know if it's only nowadays or if this has always been the case, talk about an issue, and it's in this case so heavy-handed because it's obvious that she's saying, you know, colonization is damaging, it's harmful, it, you know, appropriating landscapes, appropriating lifestyles, killing the language. And to me that was just so heavy-handed because it was not, it wasn't about anything else.
Yeah.
So I found that very preachy, and I contrast it to Milan Kundera, who writes beautifully about particularly language and the taking of language and how you can erase a people by stopping them from speaking their language. And also in the book, I think it's Yoko Ogawa, the memory police.
Oh, yeah.
Is that Yoko Ogawa?
Yeah.
Which I didn't love the book, but I do always come back to it when I'm when we think about people taking
people and
taking people's language away from them. And there's another one recently, The Minor Detail, which I've forgotten the author's name, set in Israel. The Palestinian place names have been deleted from the maps, and so she goes on a journey to a place that doesn't exist on the map anymore, and it's very succinctly done. And this just felt like it's over 360 pages of not much more than, you know, English people and French people came to this island, left it worse than when they arrived.
I think there is something more, like the things that I enjoyed about it were the conversations about art, the conversations about appropriation.
Maybe I didn't give that enough patience.
I don't know. I enjoyed the ideas that she threw up, so I didn't think it was too heavy-handed. Like, those were the things that I enjoyed about it. And considering those two perspectives and getting into JP's own history, where his mother was Algerian and wanted him to learn Arabic, so then why is he studying some dead Irish language that he has no relationship to? I think the characters you're supposed to warm to, who I did, James and Myreed, I don't understand what... And maybe this is part of the point. I don't understand what their future is, because they don't have anything. Well, they don't have any money. They don't have any way of making a living. James wants to be a painter and is quite good at painting, but the reality of his life is he's going to have to become a fisherman to support his family. Myreed is an intelligent and vivacious woman who is going to turn into her mother and then her grandmother. And it's just depressing.
I just thought that yes, it is depressing because there was that element as well. It's all a bit bleak and it just goes on and on and on. But I didn't like Lloyd and JP. And then the Islanders, I thought, who obviously were more sympathetic, but they seemed like caricatures of homely country folk to me. They're always cooking and they know what to do with the land and how to set the fire and so on. And lo and behold, the 15-year-old James is an amazing artist. I did not believe that for one second.
That's
that was so unbelievable. Out of an island of, what is the population, 20? Yeah.
I think he has the eye. You know, I don't think he's necessarily proficient in terms of his skill.
I don't think he had the eye at all. But I think it was meant to, it was just a way of, like, we want to see that he's got the option of living somewhere else, or, you know, that there are bigger things he could do.
He would be torn in half because leaving his home is who he is here to far. Yeah.
No, so that did nothing for me. Lloyd, it was just so obnoxious. It was really hard. So on the one hand, you have this preachy story, this heavy-handed, being hit over the head with this message that colonization is bad, which I agree with, by the way, but I feel like the situation in Australia is even more disappointed in some ways. Wasn't something I really wanted to read about in this context. But let's say we go ahead and then you've got to spend that 360 or 70 pages with this obnoxious Lloyd and JP. I didn't really get into JP because I DNF'd it at about, I left at about a page 100 and then I skipped to the end to see if anything amazing had happened. So I didn't, I can't speak so much to JP, but he was so unlikable.
Oh, both of them were.
Nothing redeeming, you know, there was no reason to keep reading because I had to spend all that time in his company. Mm-hmm. Then you've got the IRA troubles extract little sections, and I did not understand why they were there other than is that bringing home how severe the damage can be when you have these colonists and these invaders. Is that to sort of bring it home that
I think you're contrasting
it can be deadly.
This petty little feud between the Englishman and the Frenchman on the Irish island with the IRA versus like the Catholic versus the Protestants in the Troubles, and the fact that it's all futile. Lots of lovely men with families are getting shot in the head or in the stomach or whatever. Children are dying. What's the point of any of it? The thing that I enjoyed about that was that they get quicker and quicker. So you get more and more of those little snippets and less of Lloyd and JP, which is kind of a relief. But then I think when JP and Lloyd leave the island, I think that is akin to a kind of bombshell of its own. So they've kind of left a big crater in the whole of the fabric of the island because they've stuffed everything up by being there.
Yeah.
And so I think that's what I drew from
it.
That
it's super subtle.
Yeah, that's really subtle.
I didn't get that at all, but I see how you could read it that way.
Well, and I really had to think about, well, why did...
What's the whole point?
Why did those bits get included? Obviously, you can't avoid it because if you're setting it in 1979, that's going to become part of the fabric of the island.
I didn't think it connected at all
to the
story. Well,
no, and they were clunkily
It was very
done.
Clunky. It was like reading a... It was something you can read about in the newspaper.
And you don't get to know
you
them.
Don't
They're not
get
characters.
To know any of
They're
them.
They're just names.
You don't care. I mean, you're touched, but of course it's very touching, but you don't know any of these
Maybe
characters.
Maybe that's part of it too, the fatigue of just hearing Seamus O'Feeney, 43, two children, dead. You know, it's
really tragic. Every single one is tragic, but it didn't. I didn't understand why it was in this novel.
Yeah.
Other than, you know, yes, we're in Ireland. Yes, it's 1979. So it was otherwise, it had a point, but it was so subtle that I missed it. Mm. And then I couldn't help comparing it to Milkman
by
Anna
Burns. That was exactly what I was going to say.
Which is so exquisite.
And that gives you the atmosphere and the tension of being
that,
there.
Well, that's a Troubles story, but it doesn't name it, and that frustrated me for a while, but it's actually what's not said in Milkman that is so powerful, whereas this doesn't read as a Troubles story, and yet the Troubles keeps popping into it, so it's very tenuous. And it didn't help.
Well, there's no tension.
There's no tension. It could have been taken out because it could have been taken out and then be more like Milkman where we know the troubles are going on, but, you know, show how the characters are reacting to that if it's part of the story. Mm. So I just found that confused me. And then the art. I am not into.
Anna's face right now. I wish you could all see it.
I am not into descriptions of people painting and getting into their art. It's very pretentious and a little bit goes a long way. It can be done. Mm-hmm. So there are always exceptions. Virginia Woolf in To the Lighthouse has a character who paints, and there's just enough that you get the frustration of her not getting on the canvas what she wants, and then we immediately move on and someone comes to interrupt her and we move on, and it's not really the point, but it's enough of the point to get her character. This, I mean, we know from the first scene Lloyd is an obsessive, arrogant artist, self-absorbed artist. So I actually could have done with not a single scene of him trying to paint because I already know that's what he's going to be doing.
Further.
You don't have to keep telling me because it's obvious.
Yeah, he's not even a good artist because he just keeps doing things after Gauguin, after Rembrandt, after so-and-so. And that isn't like the titles of his works alone. I think if he just had those, they would have been enough to be like, okay, this guy is obnoxious and he can't think of an idea on his own.
No,
which is also kind of the point of the book, that he's there to steal their either beautiful landscape or the talent of a young person.
His mind works in short, yes, bad poetry snippets. Yes,
that really frustrated me.
I skipped.
I felt like I was reading Bridge of Clay again, and I didn't find it poetic. I didn't find it added to anything.
No.
I thought that could have just been a sentence, and later there are long run-on sentences, and that would have been more pleasing, I think.
There was no excuse for that.
Yeah.
And the other thing, though, that is interesting is this idea of him stealing the landscape, which I do find interesting, and I suppose it raises the question, if an artist paints local people in a country that's not their own country, are they appropriating that culture or that landscape? And it did make me think of an Australian, white Australian artist, Ben Quilty, who's a super talented artist and very highly renowned and recognised artist. And he says he doesn't paint many landscapes of Australia because he believes that the Aboriginal Australian artists are the best landscape painters. Mm-hmm. So what does he have to add? He doesn't need to do that, which is not to say that's, you know, right or wrong. And I just love the fact that he's put some thought into it more than anything else. Yeah. And he has such respect and reverence for their culture and the innovative ways that they have mapped and painted country that he feels he has nothing he can add to that. Mm-hmm. And so it does, you know, when you look at Lloyd just painting a very English style landscape in this different land, that perhaps raises that question. But it
that doesn't ever go any deeper than that, though. It leaves you to do all those, to do the thinking, which is fine, you know, that's okay. And but it also doesn't explore it in any way.
No, and it's a bit different because there are no particular artists on the island. I mean, they try to suggest that this 15-year-old boy suddenly becomes an artist. But
I think the offensive thing is that he, on the first day, several people say to him, well, you're not going to paint us, are you?
Mm.
Are the people of the island? And he says, no, I'm here to paint landscapes. And then he does paint the people.
Yes, and which I thought was unforgivable.
No, absolutely. And it is unforgivable. And they feel rightly really upset about that and the way that he has portrayed them. And James has a big go at him and says, well, you don't understand it. You've romanticized it and exoticized my mother to be this center of the island, where actually she's not. And you don't understand what you're talking about, and it's just – it's bad.
Yeah, it's just bad art. Which is a really
satisfying piece of writing, but that comes about 20 pages before the end.
Yeah, well, I did get to that bit because I skipped forward. But, yeah, it just all those scenes of him painting were so repetitive, and because he's unlikable and, as you say, not a great artist, I was so not interested in reading them. Mm. So I had to DNF.
Well, so. I'm sorry I suggested it. But we haven't hated a book together for a while.
No, and I feel bad.
Yeah, I do,
because I do feel like Audrey McGee is actually an author that I would
writer.
Like.
No, yeah, I liked some passages.
She's
and that,
not
yeah.
a bad writer.
Sorry, Audrey.
I do feel like I could potentially give her another go.
Yeah, maybe the historical fiction. I never like experimental writing without a point.
No, I think the point is all about that colonisation is bad.
Mm. Interesting. It would be interesting to hear. I want to talk to now people who have enjoyed it and see why they enjoyed it.
I'll ask Nick.
Because so many people told me that it was good.
I know. Mm. I know. Have we missed the point? Please let us know. So
if you loved it, write in.
You can email us. This has happened before.
True.
Yeah. So you can email us at booksonthegopodcast@gmail.com. We're on Facebook at Books on the Go. I'm on Instagram, Twitter and Litzy at A. Bailey Karras. And Annie?
I'm on Instagram, Twitter and Litzy at Mr_Annie.
And so we'll see you next week. We don't know what book yet, do we?
I
we'll
don't think
find
so.
A book and we'll see you next week. Bye for now.
Bye.